Survivor fans know there's nothing more important than a tribe you can trust, and the hunt for the perfect hire can be as tough as winning an immunity challenge. But what if you could just skip the search and just match? Enter Indeed, the ultimate hiring partner. With over 350 million monthly visitors worldwide, according to Indeed data, Indeed is more than a job site. It's your personalized hiring platform. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, connecting you with candidates at the speed you need. According to a recent Indeed survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches. Indeed is your compass in the hiring jungle. It's a matching engine, not just for hiring, but effortlessly assembling your dream team. Indeed's matching engine learns from your preferences, leveraging over 140 million qualifications daily. The more you use it, the sharper it gets. Join 3.5 million businesses worldwide that trust Indeed for fast, quality hires. Listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/survivor. Go to Indeed.com/survivor now. Support our show by mentioning you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/survivor. Terms and conditions apply. Need a hire? You need Indeed.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
We talk a lot on the podcast about the physical challenges of Survivor, but a good social game just as important.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be draining constantly being around people who you're both competing with and who you want on your side.
I can imagine. And even off the island, with so much going on in our lives, it's easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin.
But therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't really drain your battery.
Exactly. Like, what's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Do you thrive around people or need some extra time alone?
Therapy can help you figure out what works for you.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's all online and made to be convenient and flexible.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist.
And you can switch therapists at any time for free, so you're sure you're aligned with the right person.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onfire today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onfire.
Welcome to On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. I'm Jeff Probst, the host and showrunner of Survivor. Each week, I'm joined by Jay Wolf, Survivor fan and the producer of this podcast. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Jeff.
We're also joined by former Survivor player, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Vidaris. Hey, Dee.
What's up? What's up?
So each week, we dissect the big moments of the most recent episode of Survivor, and we bring you insights from the points of view of the fan, the player, and the producer. All right, let's get into it. Episode 5, Survivor 46. Jay, what stood out to you?
I want to start with dance class. You know, in this episode, we saw this montage of Sika teaching each other how to salsa dance. And Jeff, we've talked about 90 minutes before, but I wanted to get into it a little bit deeper here. We began this episode with this salsa dancing lesson, and I was just curious, is the fact that we get to see fun camp life like a dance class the direct result of having longer episodes?
Yes, it is. And let me explain something. I don't think we talk enough about this, but there's a difference between a show that is made for a network like CBS or ABC or Fox or NBC and a show that is made primarily for a streamer like Paramount Plus. Survivor's made for the network. It does air on Paramount Plus, but because it airs on a network, we are limited in terms of our time. We have to be down to the second. It's the same amount of time every week. I'm talking, it's so specific that if we're editing an episode and we've got it closer and closer and closer to time, but we've got 10 seconds, we just can't trim the 10 seconds out, I will call the network and say, is there any chance we could get 10 seconds? Oh. And they have to agree to give us 10 seconds because it's either going to come out of the show that's on at 9 o'clock, or it's going to come out of a commercial that they have slotted for the show, which is where the money that pays for these shows. So it's a big deal. But yeah, the 90 minutes has obviously been great because it just expands everything. You have idle hunts, you have longer tribals, you have more time on a journey or the risk reward game, and camp life. And if you go back to the early seasons, there was a lot of camp life because there was nothing else going on. The players were learning how to play the game, and it was basically whoever had the most people in their alliance typically won. There wasn't a lot of maneuvering because there were no twists or advantages to deal with. Well, as the game expanded and we started expanding the twists and the idols and all that stuff, we had to make choices. We have 44 minutes. What are we going to show? Mm-hmm. Well, you have to show anything that's related to the vote. which means you have to get rid of things that aren't related to the vote, like salsa dancing. And I'm sure Dee will agree with this, even though you had 90 minutes. The biggest frustration for the players is they say, you don't show all the fun things we do.
Oh my God, yes. And there's so much connection that you watch as an audience, like you feel connected to the players more.
Yeah, it is a vital part of the game, like the salsa dancing that we saw here. They are forming a community. They're developing their own rituals and their own norms, and those things are going to play out somehow in tribal. So the 90 minutes allows us to take you a little deeper in to that player experience.
Well, there's a lot there, and I want to ask Dee about the strategy of salsa dancing as well.
Let's do it.
You know, the salsa may seem goofy, but it's all part of the strategy if you think about it. You know, it's going to be very important for me to really be in lockstep with my number one ally, Maria.
So let's switch partners.
We're trying to walk the tightrope of the middle of this tribe.
Dee, what is it you're balancing when it comes to being a part of this community that you're forming, but you're with these people that you're playing against? And here in the salsa example,
yeah,
it's a fun diversion. But as Charlie is telling us, it's also impacting the relationship and impacting the gameplay. So if you don't participate in the salsa, it is going to impact your game. So you kind of have to do the salsa dancing, even if you don't want to do the salsa dancing.
Yeah.
Where does all that live from a strategy perspective?
Listen, if someone told me they didn't want to participate in my salsa dancing, I'd be like, what? You don't want to you don't want to be in my world? You don't care? And I'll tell you a story. In my season, Sifu did a lot of Tai Chi. And back then, I didn't know what Tai Chi was. Personally, I didn't even care. But I wanted to get him out. And he wanted to do Tai Chi in the morning. So if he wants me to be a Tai Chi master, I'll do whatever you want me to do, as long as you don't know that I want to vote you out. So I think that this is just a moment to let people inside your world. But it is something that you should take personal if someone doesn't want to be part of it, because it is strategy at the end of the day.
Crazy. So you're sitting there hangry and somebody says, get up, we're salsa dancing. I guess you're salsa dancing.
You're in.
You gotta do it.
All right, let's get to the next moment. Jeff, I've noticed a lot this season that the editors kind of have their tongue in their cheek a little bit. They're kind of bending the fourth wall sometimes. And what I mean by that is that they're sort of speaking directly to the audience. There's a situation in this episode where Hunter walks by an idol and he says, I might walk right by an idol, and then the camera pans to it. Yeah. And then the camera pans to it.
Yeah.
Later in the episode, Q says, you notice how Kenzie's always saying, what y'all talking about? And we had this really fun montage.
Hey, have you noticed when Kenzie woke up, the first thing she always asks is, what y'all talking about?
Yeah, I noticed that.
What are y'all talking about?
Salmon.
What are y'all talking about?
Chopping up wood.
What are y'all talking about?
Coconuts versus papayas.
What are y'all talking about?
Q over here telling us to write his name down.
What y'all talking about?
Exactly. It's fun, but it's sort of bringing the audience in on the joke. And Jeff, it connects me to the playfulness that exists between producers and editors and players and how you bring the audience in.
Well, Jay, I think you said it. Playful. That's how we look at it, because there's a triangle. I know I've talked about this before, but we see it as the producers who create the game, the players that play the game, and the audience that watches the game. And after 23 years, this bond with the audience is deep. And so we want an audience member to be as involved as possible, short of being on the island. So whether it's an Andy Griffith or Top Gun tribute, or like when we took you inside Q's mind and he was remembering that fumble when he played football, or this, playing on the fact that yes, as a player, you might be walking past an idol and you don't know it. We know it. And that is our way of sort of winking at the audience, reminding them that it is really fun to produce this show. And we're so in tune as a unit producing the show that we do know how to set up a shot that Dee would never know she was close to the idol. It just looks like a normal shot, right, Dee?
Yeah, everything looks the same.
Yeah, and so we're able to do that and have this fun little moment with the audience that they're ahead of the player. It's right there. It's right in front of his face.
So annoying.
Dee, on this, and forgive me if this sounds a little new agey, but did you feel any sort of bond or connection with the audience when you were out there? Like, are you aware when you find an idol or you pull off a blindside, are you thinking, oh man, this is going to be so awesome on TV? Or does that not hit you until you come back and you watch it yourself?
That's a great question, Jay. I feel like for me, it didn't fully hit until I watched myself back on TV. And there's a saying that goes, wherever you are, be there. That's exactly what it feels like finding an idol or pulling off a blindside. You are so present that you kind of forget that you're on TV for a second. And I'll tell you another moment. Any other moment, I did feel connection, but mostly with my family and friends, because you do think to yourself, oh my goodness, they're going to look back and watch me. I want to make them proud. So if anything, that kind of just helps when you're playing the game because it pumps you up to play that much harder.
Mm. Cool.
Jay, one thing we notice as well is that maybe for the first 8 hours, players might be aware of the cameras.
Yeah.
But by the end of day one, they've forgotten. And it's a weird thing, but they forget. That's why you see them picking their nose or doing things like that. Because to Dee's point, they are playing this game and we're observing, but it becomes normal.
Right.
It's also so intense. The moment that you step into the island, you're playing. So you have to forget whether you want to or not.
Mm. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about tribe swaps and Yanu finally gets an immunity win. We will dive into what it feels like to go 11 days without fire. Be right back. Survivor fans know there's nothing more important than a tribe you can trust, and the hunt for the perfect hire can be as tough as winning an immunity challenge. But what if you could just skip the search and just match? Enter Indeed, the ultimate hiring partner. With over 350 million monthly visitors worldwide, according to Indeed data, Indeed is more than a job site. It's your personalized hiring platform. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, connecting you with candidates at the speed you need. According to a recent Indeed survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches. Indeed is your compass in the hiring jungle. It's a matching engine, not just for hiring, but effortlessly assembling your dream team. Indeed's matching engine learns from your preferences, leveraging over 140 million qualifications daily. The more you use it, the sharper it gets. Join 3.5 million businesses worldwide that trust Indeed for fast, quality hires. Listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/survivor. Go to Indeed.com/survivor now. Support our show by mentioning you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/survivor. Terms and conditions apply. Need a hire? You need Indeed.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
We talk a lot on the podcast about the physical challenges of Survivor, but a good social game, just as important.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be draining constantly being around people who you're both competing with and who you want on your side.
I can imagine. And even off the island, with so much going on in our lives, it's easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin.
But therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't really drain your battery.
Exactly. Like, what's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Do you thrive around people or need some extra time alone?
Therapy can help you figure out what works for you.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's all online and made to be convenient and flexible.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist.
And you can switch therapists at any time for free, so you're sure you're aligned with the right person.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onfire today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onfire.
Welcome back to On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. All right, Jay, what's the next moment?
All right, Jeff, I'm dying to ask you this question. And I don't think I'm the only Survivor fan who's thinking this, but I'm watching the first few scenes. I'm watching Yanu dwindle down to three players. And I turn to my partner on the couch and I say, you think there's going to be a swap this episode?
Yeah.
Jeff, can you set the record straight for us? Are there decisions happening mid-game on your end, or is it all decided ahead of time, no matter how many players Yanu possibly loses?
All right, this question gets asked a lot. Here's the truth. Yes, we could decide in a moment to swap tribes if we wanted to, and there would be no fairness issue. You know, we have standards and practices. They're out there to make sure that we don't cheat the game in any way. You can do a random swap anytime you want. That's part of the fabric of the game. Swaps happen all the time. But the truth is, with rare exceptions, when something weird has happened, we already know when and how we're going to do a tribe swap. For instance, right now we are working on the creative for Survivor 47. And if I wanted to, I could tell you if we're going to swap tribes in that season and what episode that would be. And the reason you really need to know is that there's a lot of storytelling involved in a swap. It changes everything. So now you have three new tribes. What are their stories? Who's potentially now on the bottom? What alliances just got broken up? Now who has the advantage in the idol and who knows about it? So all of that's going to take a lot of time. And as we said, we only have a finite amount of time.
Right.
So we have to think through all of that stuff. And look, we've had many tribes in the new era lose a lot and we never rescue them. Mm. In fact, as we've talked about, losing a lot certainly sucks for the people who get voted out, but can be incredibly bonding for those who survive. And now when you get to the merge, that bond is powerful. So we just trust the format and we let it play out.
Dee, as a player, are you planning for a swap? And how would you do that?
Of course, you always, always, always have to plan for a swap. It is better to be prepared than to be sorry. And most of my deep thinking was done at night because I always said I didn't come on Survivor to sleep. So first of all, you can't even sleep, especially moments before a swap. So you can't detach yourself, but you got to be prepared and you got to ask yourself, who am I locked in with 100%? Who's most capable of turning on me? Who from the other tribes went on a journey and what possible advantage will they have? And I think another thing that a lot of players miss too is you got to be locked in with whatever stories you're going to tell the other tribes because you don't know who's going to be in what tribe. So I think that that's like extremely important and it's missed. But not only that it's missed, it's just like not as calculated. So you need to be extremely detailed.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot to keep track of. And you don't get those handy little graphics that pop up with people's names that say that they have two hidden immunity idols.
Yeah, exactly. We don't even get a journal. We don't get a pen. This is all in your mind. It's crazy.
All right, let's move to the next moment. And the next moment's a big one. Yanu win, finally.
Finally.
We see this beautiful slow motion shot. Q is on the slingshot. It hits the elation on his face. And after they win, we hear this.
Honestly, it feels so good, but all I can think about right now is that I'm not gonna wake up freezing cold tomorrow. It's been so hard sleeping without fire for the last 11 days, like brutal. I'm so happy.
Jeff, you said to their tribe in this episode, they literally broke the record most nights without flint, most nights without fire. Does it at all make you rethink the flint penalty?
Absolutely not. Let me get a bullhorn.
The new era is here, everyone. Earn everything, penalties for losing.
Yeah, expect more of that. This is what Survivor is about. If you want a quote unquote fun experience, go find another show. This is Survivor. This is why people want it, because there is a penalty for losing, because you have to survive without a flint or whatever the condition is. I loved keeping their flint, not because I love inflicting pain, but because it's a consequence. And Survivor has a lot of consequences. The biggest one is you get voted out and your game is over. So you lose an immunity. You lose a player, you lose your flint, you lose your morale, suddenly you're hungrier, you lose your patience, and it just makes a moment when you do win, like this one, so satisfying. And now Sega has to go deal with this situation, and their game is going to change as a result.
Dee, I've heard players speak on both sides of this. I'm curious where you stand. Some have said that there's kind of a benefit to losing because you've been to tribal, you know how to do it. And that there's also some downsides to winning because you never experienced that. And then late in the game, you're thrown into it. You didn't go to tribal until late in the game. So do you feel like there's a pressure point where too many wins is actually detrimental?
Okay, I go back and forth with this question a lot. And I'm going to put my boxing gloves on for you, Jeff. So you always say there's no place to hide with the three tribe format. But I disagree because I didn't go to tribal until late in the game. So I was able to hide, even though there were six players in our tribe. That was my experience. Obviously, I'm very grateful. That's the way to do it. When you're on Survivor and you're playing, you want to keep winning. But on the flip side, there is such a thing as too many wins hurting your game because one, I may need someone off my tribe that I don't necessarily want to make the merge because they either know too much information or they'll flip on me, or something as simple as feeling secure at tribal. Tribal is scary. And the earlier you go to tribal, the faster that fear goes away because you're at tribal. You want to make sure you're keeping Jeff comfortable answering the questions he asks. And it's very detailed questions. You want to make sure the blind side feels safe. You want to make sure the backup vote feels safe. You're looking at cues, people's body language. You have more eyes and ears on you. So I personally felt confident confronting tribal fears, even though we went very late on in the game. But a big reason was because I formed a strong alliance beforehand. But that's not necessarily the case with every player. So that's why I go back and forth with this question a lot, because it just depends on where you land and how you go about playing.
And Dee, that's an interesting point you're bringing up. When I say there's nowhere to hide, I really mean because there's only six people on a tribe. So if you go to tribal, it's very small in terms of numbers. But you bring up a really interesting point, but there are three tribes.
Right, right.
So there, if you can win, or just really if you can not lose, then you can hide in the game. I didn't really think about it that way. So that is the other side of that coin of having a small tribe. Just avoid tribal and you'll be good to go.
Avoid tribal, baby.
Till a certain point, Dee, I want to follow up.
Yeah.
Can you personally imagine or share with us what you think 11 days without fire would feel like?
Oh my God. First of all, so we got stormed on twice and we had a flint the entire time, but we had embers, right? And I can't even imagine what Yanu's going through. I really can't. Props to them, because some of my happiest moments were just out there sitting around the campfire, sharing stories with my tri-mates. You kind of know when you haven't seen someone you care about in a long time and you finally hug them and it feels so special. That's what having fire feels like on Survivor. It feels like comfort. Wow. It feels like familiarity. It feels like you're at home, as crazy as it sounds, because of the warmth. But no, I can't imagine what they're going through. I'm glad I never experienced that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the return of Survivor Trivia, sort of. And when is it okay to bring a machete to a strategy session? We'll be right back. Welcome back to On Fire. And hey, if you're liking this podcast and you haven't subscribed, you should, because then it will automatically download the next episode. Okay, Jay, what's the next moment?
All right, Jeff, the next moment for me is the game that occurs at the journey. I want to set it up by saying this. Last season, you brought back the Survivor Auction. Hadn't seen it in years, was thrilled to see it. Now we get this game with Hunter where he needs to know some Survivor trivia. And I'm thinking to myself, is this Survivor trivia rehashed?
Yes, definitely. The 90 minutes allows us to go back into the archives and start looking at some old ideas. But what was really interesting to me about this moment is that I am still learning, because personally, I've avoided doing trivia types of things related to Survivor. And the reason is I always felt like it was too exclusionary. You have to be a massive Survivor fan. You have to be a fanatic to be able to put the logos in order. So you're not going to be as interested if you aren't. And I thought, yeah, that's going to leave too many people out. And then I realized, yeah, in the same way that slide puzzles leave people out who can't do slide puzzles or logic problems, things like that. And I realized this was my own bias. So once that became clear to me, that Survivor trivia is no different than other things that will appeal to some and won't appeal to others, then it became great to put it in the show.
Mm. I thought the other really creative solve that you had for this bias that you mentioned, Jeff, is that we got to see all these really cool flashbacks. So even if you didn't necessarily see Khao Rang, you still kind of got to see a moment of it. And it was really fun to see some of our old favorites show up on screen. Dee, when you have an iconic challenge, do you know you're in an iconic challenge?
Absolutely.
You do.
Yes, you know, and Jay just mentioned it. The auction, for example, when those votes came in and we read Blast from a Past, Auction's back. Even Kendra started breaking it down, like if she was at a party at home. Like it is like the most exciting feeling in the freaking world. So at first you realize it, but I'm sure Hunter, the moment that he started to do it, that's when he was like, oh crap, I gotta pay attention to what's going on. And I actually didn't even know before I went on the show myself that there was such a thing as super fan versus fan. They're two completely different things. So if Hunter is not a super fan, I doubt he was going to get that.
Dee, I find that fascinating that you did not know there was a difference between a super fan.
I did not know that. I thought I was a super fan because I loved the show and I told people about the show and I would binge and I would look forward to binging it. But no, a super fan is someone that knows every boot order, every season. Even I'm sure a super fan can solve that puzzle. It's that much of a deeper level. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Before we get to the end of the episode, I got to talk about Jem with the machete in the parlor room. Ben and Jem have a talk. And Jem is playing hard. So hard, in fact, that she decides to bring a weapon to a strategy session.
Jem corners me. She's trying to get some information.
Because she's got information.
You just know when you know. She's holding the machete, so I grab the hammer, like, try to hold my space.
Tonight is do or die.
I know, it's do or die.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's literally do or die. They're holding a hammer and a machete. Ben's telling us that Jem is playing super hard. Dee, you also played very hard. And for you, it worked.
Yeah.
It doesn't end up working out for Jem. Does that make Jem some sort of lesser player, or is there more nuance there?
No, listen, I don't think it makes her less of a player. It's a little bit more complicated than that. It just kind of seems like she was cornering everyone and taking the same approach with every single person with the machete over her shoulder. You can do that, but you don't say things like do or die when you have a machete on your hand. But no, I just think, look, word gets around camp in these final moments before tribal. You just got to know how to approach people. You got to use different tactics with different people. So for that, playing hard, quote unquote, playing hard can mean different things for different players. And for Ben, it was just too much intensity, right? And I played hard, but I knew when to fall back and when to let other people lead, right? I think it just goes to show it's the way that you approach people when your back is up against the wall.
Is it ever okay to bring a machete to a strategy session?
It is if the person's pissing you off. No, I'm just kidding. But no. We always have it in hand. It feels really cool to walk around like chopping off palm fronds, but you just can't be swinging it around, especially if it's the person you want to go home.
Jeff, any parting thoughts on Jem?
Yeah, I went back to my first notes from when I first talked to Jem, and what I wrote was, she's capital letters, amazing, an absolute superstar. She could win. She's super driven. She's accomplished. She's going to fight hard to move forward in the game. She has a killer instinct and a deep, soulful yearning to prove and succeed. And, you know, I think Dee said it really well. It doesn't mean you're a lesser player when you're out earlier than you hope. That is the fate for most every player, which is why you have to play the first time as though you're playing the second. You have to play to win. It's the only smart choice. And if you fail, well, that's the game. That's part of the game. But you can't avoid trying to fail. You'll never win.
All right. It's time for some fan questions. And you at home, you're sitting there, you're listening to this podcast right now. Why don't you get on your computer and write yourself a little email to survivorshoutout@cbs.com with your burning question? Because guess what? I'm going to read that question. I'm going to read it here. And we might answer it on the show, like this one that comes from Ben. He writes, "Hi, I hope you're having a great day. Thanks, Ben. I hope you are too." He writes, "Jeff, I was wondering if you could talk about the design of Tribal Council for this season."
Yeah, Zach Jensen designs Tribal Council. It's a giant set piece. Obviously, it's very expensive to build. It takes a lot of time, not only to lay it out, but then to physically build it. And now, because we're in Fiji full time, we can't always lean into the Fijian culture, but we do want each season to be unique. And so you're building a world essentially that the players are going to inhabit, and you want it to feel alive. So sometimes Zach will design a village that feels like people are living in it while we're there. And sometimes it's more presentational, like this season. Sometimes it'll be an old ruin from thousands of years ago. You just want the players to walk in and know that something big is happening. This is where your actions either help you or hurt you. Tribal Council is where you're held accountable. And over the years, we've gotten more and more elaborate, and our footprint for Tribal is bigger now. So when the players walk in and they see it, they're usually stunned. And Dee, I'm curious if you felt this, because it's a big part of our goal to have the player have a fully immersive experience. And that includes Tribal Council feeling like it really exists.
Yeah, and I actually love when you said that you want us to feel like something big is happening, because when we're at camp, we're surrounded by dirt. Like, we're not showering. There's bamboos, palm trees, like coconuts, etc. But when you first walk into Tribal, at least for me, I felt like I was on set of a movie. I didn't even feel like I was playing Survivor. I felt like I was about to start acting. And that's how big it is. Wow. And even moments before walking into Tribal, there's skulls hanging, which kind of like sets in the feeling of, oh my God, this is real. Like, it doesn't necessarily equal death, like what a skull would signify, but it equals the ending of someone's game. So it, as much as I was in all of all the details, it's also extremely intimidating. So it does make us feel like we're inhabited in a different world. And I love it. All right. So the next question is coming from Bob. "Hey, Jeff, Jay, and Dee. I have a production editing question. I always stick around at the end of each episode so I can hear Jeff say, next time on Survivor, and see what's coming next week. But I also love to watch the tag at the end, the final interview clip from the player that was just voted out. I'm always amazed that there's just enough time at the end of the episode for the players to say their closing piece. So how does that work?
Well, before we get into how it works, I have to comment on Dee's read of next time on Survivor. Because, Jay, you and I talked about this in the first season of the podcast. I was insistent that there was a pause before Survivor. So when I read it, I would say next time on Survivor because I wanted to brand Survivor, hit it hard. Wow. And so the editors in the first few episodes would edit it. And when I would see the cut, it would say next time on Survivor. I go, no, there's got to be a pause. And I remember it was a little bit of a match between us, but they were cool and ultimately gave in to my little whim. But it was really, for some reason, important to me. And now it's become part of it, which is next time on Survivor. So yes, how it works is, Bob, these are shot literally moments after the vote. Dee wouldn't know because she was never voted out.
Thank God.
But literally, the player walks off and the other players leave. And then they sit down and the producer says, okay, you know, what are you feeling? And so that pain is real. That shock is still settling in. And oftentimes the players really don't know what happened. They don't know how they got blindsided. Yes, we edit them down because they're almost always longer than our 20 seconds that we have allotted in our show. But it's still the same approach as everything else on Survivor. What is the essence of what they wanted to say? You know, in some cases is, hey, this was the adventure of my lifetime. In other times it's, hey, they got me. In other times it's, I should have played my idol. Whatever it is, we just condense it down, but still keep the essence.
Dee, this raises a question for me. Seeing that you never got to do this little post-tribal speech.
Yeah. Oh, I love where you're going.
I'm nervous.
Had Keturah taken an opportunity to send you home at Final Five?
Nice.
Yeah.
What would your speech have been?
Well, look, obviously, I'm glad I never did one. But I think if I did, my emotional butt would be crying. Like, I would be crying, not only because a part of me would be sad that I didn't accomplish something that I wanted to do, and it's a big deal, but another part of me would be crying of gratitude because I was able to play the game. And not a lot of people get to say that they played Survivor. So I think my speech would just be, you know what, guys, you got me, but respect. Respect to you guys.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have to say it either, Dee.
Thanks, Jay.
All right. Question number three comes from Kieran. He writes, big fan of the show and new fan of the podcast. I'm already appreciating the different perspectives on the show. In the past, seasons were either named after the location they took place or after the theme of the season. In the new era, the seasons are numbered. What informed this decision to better the show? Is it an attempt to put more focus on the players of the season than the theme of the season? Would love to hear Jeff's perspective.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning. For years, we themed our seasons simply based on the location. When you went to Africa or China or Guatemala, you could bring in the local culture and build your whole creative around that. But then unique locations became fewer because we had been everywhere. So now we had to find new ways to give shape to a season, and we started using themes based on twists or bigger ideas like Ghost Island or Island of the Idols, things like that. But I got to be honest, those are tough to come up with. And after doing, you know, 40 of them, I saw the writing on the wall. So with Winners at War, we were going to end this era of gameplay. And we also realized we have to start numbering the seasons. And there are pros and cons. The cons are obvious. Numbers are not as memorable as Ghost Island or Island of the Idols. You can't make fun of the titles either. But the pros are you don't have to come up with a name like Ghost Island or Island of the Idols. And you can focus on the players, as you mentioned in your question. So I could see another theme season coming up in the future. It would still have a number in it. So if it was Survivor 49 and there was a theme, but it would have to be a very special occasion. Otherwise, the numbers are here to stay.
Jeff, Jay, and I can help you come up with some themes.
I can't wait, Dee. And I mean it when I say I can't wait.
If you can give me...
Okay, dude. Wait. I'm going to hold both of you to this. In an upcoming podcast, whenever you have your ideas together, pitch them.
All right, Jay.
All right, maybe for a very special episode of On Fire, we will go through and have our pitches rejected by Jeff.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of On Fire. If you enjoy the show and you have a moment, please give us a rating. It helps the show grow.
And if you really want to go for it, you could leave us a review like this one that comes from LSU Chrissy that says, "It's my survivor instruction manual. Geeking out over this podcast and the incredible behind the scenes info. Love it so much. And I'm annoying my husband with all the details he didn't ask for while we watch new episodes. Sorry, not sorry."
If you do leave us a review, we might just read it here. So please go do that wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's a brand new episode of Survivor every Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And immediately following the episode, there's a new episode of this podcast on fire. See you then.